Deep in the farthest recesses of the most distant jungle lies a city. A city populated by the most mysterious, terrifying, and downright grotesque denizens ever seen by mortal eye. Here, in the darkened corners of this cavernous locale, sits an ordinary, average brick building with an innocuous, ordinary, average blinking neon sign which reads, On Air. It is here where each week, Seth Breedlove and Mark Matzke convene to discuss the greatest mysteries the world has ever known. Now, strap on your hiking boots, grab your trusty walking stick, and don't forget your machete as we begin our journey through Monsteropolis.
This is Monsteropolis, a show about legends, anomalies, and monsters. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Seth Breedlove. I'm joined today, for once, by by my friend Mark Maskey.
Hello. I actually showed up.
Yeah. You finally showed up to do the show.
I did my due diligence.
Yeah. We are in the throes of lizard mania here. Ooh. on the Monsteropolis podcast. Monsteropolis, by the way, the official podcast of Small Town Monsters. We are talking about lizard mania. The previous episodes delved into the reptilian conspiracy and lost cities and sightings of lizard-like people roaming the desert, mostly. Well, you talked about British Columbia and the Ohio Valley, so I guess it's not strictly...
Everywhere monsters are sold.
Everywhere monsters are, there are lizard people. But this week, we're gonna widen out and talk about not just lizards, but frog people as well. Not just lizard people,
amphibious,
but frog people.
Amphibious creatures.
Amphibious beings.
Walk upright.
Yeah. Are there crocodile men sightings?
Yes.
Are there?
I believe so. In Florida, I've heard of that.
Crocodile men. Crocodile men.
Mm-hmm.
That's horrifying.
Isn't it?
Crocodiles, alligator men, that would be, right?
Oh, right.
Alligator men.
Alligator men.
Yeah, that's a terrifying idea because an alligator on its own is pretty creepy. And then when you have it run at you still on its hind legs, it's even worse.
Yeah, there's an old like a 50s movie about the alligator people. Ooh. That has the effects on it are, you know, 50s B movie quality, but it's still kind of terrifying actually.
Yeah. There was like a video this past week of an 8-foot alligator walking right through Hilton Head.
Oh, really?
Right through a neighborhood. And yikes. I know right where it is, over by Shipyard, but that's where we go on vacation every year. And a lady was just killed there a couple of years ago by an alligator.
Mm-hmm.
They don't really do anything to monitor the alligator. I mean, what are you going to do? But there's just, you'll be walking along the bike path there, and all of a sudden there's an alligator like 20 feet away from you.
There is that Disney tragedy too long ago.
Yeah.
Those are nothing to mess with, really.
Uh-uh. No.
Powerful.
Yeah. Terrifying. We're gonna talk today about the reptilians and amphibians. Well, we should probably just get into
should we do one more plug?
Yeah. Oh yeah, like, yeah. I didn't even talk about
the
yes.
very last gasp. This is the last chance to really plug it, I think, mm-hmm. right? Because it's so post around the 13th or so.
Yeah, I'll be in Vegas when this posts. July 19th, Black Forge Coffee House. Mark and I will be recording live an episode of Monsteropolis all about the Chestnut Ridge and Chestnut Ridge weirdness. We will be in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Black Forge Coffee House. Our new home away from home. And it'll be Mark and I, and then we'll actually have Jason with us as well. And I'm sure Jason will probably just sit in the background and hurl insults at us or something. But
he can riff the show.
Yeah,
that'd be.
We'll have what do they call that when someone just kind of like sit? What's the
heckle?
A heckler. Yeah, a heckler. So yeah, the tickets are $5 to $10. You can watch Mark and I live. We've been saying on every show, but seating is limited, so get there early, get your seat. July 27th, Coshocton, we are doing a screening of On the Trail of Bigfoot.
The entire series.
The entire 6-episode series. Mark will be there, I'll be there, Andy will be there, Adam Dugan will be there, Adrian will probably be there. So a lot of the people that are involved in the production side of things will be there. The Ohio Night Stalkers will also be there, and they were, of course, featured in episode 6 of the miniseries, and there's a vendor's room and things like that. What's the name of the place again? Johnson
Hummerkaus Museum.
Yeah. So you can learn more about that by going on our Facebook page, or I'm sure going to their website, which I don't know what the URL is.
Yeah.
But you should look up that event. I think that'll be a fun event. Tickets are $5 to $10 for that as well. Yeah. Okay. One of the most commonly asked questions of STM and Monsteropolis has been an episode about the Lizard Man of Scape or Swamp. This is not that episode. This is not going to be entirely devoted to the Lizard Man, but we want to touch upon the Lizard Man subject and story, and then use that as a spinning off point into some other creepy swamp dwellers, river dwellers as well.
And ditch dwellers.
Yeah. those classic, monsters. Yeah. Classic ditch dweller situation. The Lizard Man, Scape or Swamp, 1988, is it? This is an 80s story. It's one of the reasons I've always wanted to do it. I believe it's 1988. Okay, yeah, this is an original newspaper article that ran when the story of the Lizard Man was first kind of hitting the media, titled Lizard Man Creeps into South Carolina Town's Imagination. Bishopville, South Carolina, as Jerry Rooks likes to tell it, Lizard Man is the biggest event in Lee County in 125 years. This is the biggest thing that's happened here since the Civil War, said Rooks, who owns Rooks Sales and Service, a general store in the county seat. Bishopville, a tall inflatable lizard, testimony to the creature a 17-year-old boy said had chased him near a swamp, stands in Rooks' storefront under a sign saying Lizard Man Country. This rural town of 3,500 people sits smack in the center of South Carolina and normally attracts only an occasional tourist pulling off the interstate for gasoline or a cool drink at the Cottonland restaurant. But the saga of Lizard Man, a purported 7-foot-tall, slimy green creature that is said to live in a swamp near Bishopville, has changed all that. Since mid-July, hundreds of tourists have poured into town with dozens of reporters from around the country on their heels. The story of Lizard Man goes back to a night in late June when 17-year-old Chris Davis said he had a frightening encounter while driving to his home near Scape or Swamp about a mile from Bishopville. I was changing a flat tire when I saw something running towards me, he said. It was tall and greenish with red eyes and long arms. I jumped in the car and it grabbed the door. I took off and it chased my car, then jumped on top. I was scared to death. When Davis got home, the creature was gone, but the car had scratches and water on top of it, he said. Davis told family and friends about seeing a greenish creature, but did not call the police. I figured they wouldn't believe me. But 2 weeks later, a young couple said they found their car chewed up near the swamp. When police investigated, a friend of Davis's told the officers what Davis said he had seen. David was called in to tell his tale. The supposed creature was dubbed the Lizard Man, and the story hit the state's paper. Others stepped forward to say they had seen strange things near the swamp. A sensation broke out July 24th when 3-toed footprints measuring 14 inches by 7 inches were found in the brush. Suddenly, wildlife experts and Bigfoot consultants began flying in. Experts disagree about Lizard Man. Some claim he is really a skunk ape, an animal said to live in Florida, while others believe he is Bigfoot. No one has proved the tracks were fake, but a wildlife expert says they were not left by any known animal. Bishopville shop owners do not know what Lizard Man is either, but they are too busy to think much about it. The sultry summer days, normally slow, are as busy as the Christmas season. Store owners and vendors are selling thousands of Lizard Man t-shirts, hats, buttons, and bumper stickers. One entrepreneur took 5,000 t-shirts to the Republican convention in New Orleans and sold most of them. Lloyd Rooks, who works in his son's general store, said, "People here aren't used to having much. When we moved here back in the 1960s, Lord, people were poor. Wages were so low it was hard to get by. But we liked it a lot because it was a right quiet town and you could walk the streets in the evening without worrying. Even with Lizard Man purportedly on the loose, most still are not afraid to come out at night, though Jerry Rooks said his gun sales are up this summer. While the merchants are happy, some town residents resent the Lizard Man. "We look like buffoons," said one woman drinking tea near the Dixie Cafe. She would not give her name. "I'm embarrassed about the whole thing." At least one hoax has emerged. Several weeks ago, a man driving a camouflaged car claimed to have shot Lizard Man, but recently admitted he had lied in order to keep the legend alive. Davis, the first to say he saw the supposed Lizard Man, is doing his part to see that the legend lives on. The shy teenager, one of seven children, said he had never before traveled far from Bishopville, but he has been snapped up by three agents who whisk him around the state. They have booked him on radio and television shows and have him signing autographs and t-shirts in shopping malls. Davis' schedule forced him to quit his job at McDonald's, but appearances will have to be cut down since he has started his junior year in high school. His weekends, however, are booked solid for 3 months. The teenager said he has earned about $2,200 so far from his appearances. He wants to buy his own car. The car Lizard Man allegedly sat on was his parents'. At any rate, Davis has a 2-year contract with his agent and said he plans to keep telling his story as long as people will listen. I didn't know that about the agents. And all. I don't remember. It's been a long time since I read Lyle's book, but I thought that was interesting that he signed a deal. I've never heard of a witness signing with an agent. Have you?
No.
Not soon.
Right. I do remember that. You know, the sighting caused a wave of media attention, and in some ways, it is strongly reminiscent to me of Bray Road, just in the sense of that it was that era of media. You know, it's before internet really hit big time. So, you know, we are talking about largely local and national newscasts, radio shows, you know, shows like Inside Edition, syndicated programs. So it's sort of this just pre-internet wave of media attention. So that's pretty cool information I wasn't aware of either. Mm-hmm. Now, Chris Davis did pass away, did he not?
Yeah.
Was he shot or something?
I believe he was shot, yeah. And I think they moved away eventually, so I don't think it took place there. I think it was in a larger city somewhere where he was shot and killed. Mm. But he would have been fairly young because he was so young when the story happened. Yeah. He was just entering his junior year of high school the summer that everything, so 16 maybe?
16, 17, yeah. And you just think of the attention.
Just chewing my mint
into the phone. Lizard Man gum. But the trying to be shepherded through all of the attention like that when you're so young is probably was scary in and of itself. There's a famous sketch that he did that I think it's very basic, but it's kind of this taller and skinnier creature than a lot of people, I think. If it's close to what he saw, it's quite a bit different than what most people probably imagine when they think of Lizard Man, because we tend to think of more of a bodybuilder type body.
Right.
And then a real dragony type head.
Yeah.
But in fact, it's more just tall and thin and nondescript. If you've ever seen the prototype creature from the Black Lagoon head, it wasn't as gilled as the one that's in the film. It's just more smooth. And that's what this reminds me of quite a bit, actually, that sketch. So
the hysteria there was pretty crazy. I have another article that just kind of goes off of, it's a columnist talking about it, and she states that the newspaper received a call Tuesday from a man in McCormick County who said he had already captured the Lizard Man. He said the creature weighed 480 pounds and sounded like a cross between a wild pig and a wild cow. Sources have informed me, however, that this is the Lizard Man's mate, and there is no reward for the mate, so I'm going to continue my hunt. There were other sightings going on around the area at the time, particularly of like Bigfoot type creatures. And Lyle's book really delves into that side of things, like the idea that this might have been, you know, some sort of Bigfoot that was misidentified as a lizard man, a man lizard. But yeah, it really took over the town. And you've been to the town, if I'm not mistaken?
Yeah, we've been to Bishopville, not for the festival, but just on our way to Myrtle Beach. Mm-hmm. We made a side trip there. And it's really interesting when you go into town, you know, because we're obviously looking for traces of the lizard man in the culture. And right away, when you come into the town, there's a tavern that has a very large lizard man insignia, you know, sort of done in the kind of the folk homemade style of sign making that you see. It's prevalent in the South. And that's the style that this is done in. So that was really cool to see just right within the city limits of Bishopville. And then if you go into town, there is a cotton museum that's there that goes into great detail about, you know, what the South's major industry has always been. And there's a corner of that that's devoted to lizard man memorabilia, t-shirts and bumper stickers and old trucker style hats with lizard man stuff on it. And they have one of the casts in a glass case that you can take a look at. And in their gift shop, it's almost all lizard man stuff. And there's very few. We visited the Cotton Museum, and there's a whole lot of I survived the Skateboard Swamp and stuff like that. Mm.
And they still do the festival today. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, it's like one of their big tourist draws. Do we have anything else to say about the lizard man?
Well, did you, in the article that you read, was there a description of what Davis saw?
Not really.
Okay.
No.
Okay. I'll just read this.
It's all in the name.
Yeah. He's a lizard and he's a man.
Yeah.
But it was a frightening experience. It just taken at face value because he's changing a flat tire out in the middle of nowhere. And this is just in his own words. He says, I looked back and saw something running across the field towards me. It was about 25 yards away and I saw red eyes glowing. I ran into the car and as I locked it, the thing grabbed the door handle. I could see him from the neck down, the three big fingers, long black nails, and green, rough skin. It was strong and angry. I looked in my mirror and saw a blur of green running. I could see his toes, and then he jumped on the roof of my car. I thought I heard a grunt, and then I could see his fingers through the front windshield, where they curled around on the roof. I sped up and swerved to shake the creature off, and the side view mirror was unusable. There were scratch marks on the roof. And, you know, it's a fascinating story. His sighting in particular, I mean, he mentions green a couple times. He mentions kind of three long fingers. I think it's an interesting theory to consider. It might be a misidentified Bigfoot, because if it came up out of the water or the swamp, then you could perhaps interpret what you're seeing as scaly or slimy, when in fact it's just, you know, wet, matted fur. Mm-hmm. But what Davis saw seems to be pretty weird, and he seemed fixated on the color green, although it was 2:30, 2:40 in the morning when this all took place.
So yeah.
Begs the question, you know, how clearly can you identify colors in the middle of the night? I don't know.
I have a story from, well, this is a newspaper article from June 11th, 1978, here in Ohio, down in Dayton. But it turned me on to an interesting story about something called the Crosswick Monster. Have you heard?
Not until you mentioned it. Have I heard of it?
The one thing I can say about it, I've not done much research into this, and I'm going to once we're done with this, because I'd like to try to turn it more. But it seems to be an isolated incident, and it's from the 1880s. So those two things. But it's interesting that it's been given a name of like the something monster, because that doesn't usually happen with old 1800s newspaper reports. Yeah. But this isn't from the actual newspaper from the 1800s. This is from 1978. And this came about because of some weird activity going on near the Miami River, the Little Miami River, which runs through Loveland, if I'm not mistaken, and has some connection to the sightings of the Loveland Frog, which we're also going to talk about. But those sightings of the Loveland Frog and UFO activity seem to spur this writer on, and he's mostly making fun of this and trying to poke fun at it. But I found this Crosswick Monster story in here. So And he's talking about Ohio here. Nonetheless, there are no mountains to hide an abominable snowman or a Sasquatch, no deep lakes to preserve a possible prehistoric relic such as Nessie or Morag, who may or may not frequent certain Scottish locks. There are, however, some offbeat yarns about, of all things, the Little Miami River. Considering its fishermen and canoers, not all ecology-minded by a long shot, the stream would seem unlikely to hide anything other than fish-fighting pollution. Yet there are still stories whispering, even though the pioneers settled in along here well over 175 years ago. In the 1880s, two boys, Ed and Joe Lynch, the sons of one John Lynch, were fishing in a creek near Crosswick, a hamlet about a mile north of Waynesville, Ohio, in Warren County. Contemporary Waynesville is a pleasant town known for its abundant antique shops, a rural place but hardly remote or uncivilized, and even 90 years ago, far from being a frontier town. Ohio was settled early. Two boys could reasonably expect to do their angling in peace, but a potentially nostalgic Mark Twain scene was rudely shattered when the duo caught sight of a huge snake-like creature moving toward them. Dropping their poles, the youngsters retreated in horror when the creature suddenly reared onto a pair of hind legs which seemed to slide down from its body cavity. Retreat was wise, but too late. The what's it, extruding two front legs or arms, grabbed 13-year-old Ed. Joe, 11, reacted like any normal boy in such a situation. He screamed his head off. Three men, the Reverend Jacob Horn, George Pendleton, and Alan Jordan, were quarrying a short distance away. The commotion attracted their attention, and they hastened to find out what was going on. What they saw must have stunned them. The reptilian monster clutching Ed was heading for a huge old sycamore tree with a gaping hollow in its vast base. The rescuers charged, and the what's it dropped its prey to retreat inside the tree. Ed Lynch, having narrowly avoided being lunch, was described as being almost dead with fright, which, all things considered, seems reasonable. The boy was carried to his home and Dr. L.C. Lukens summoned from Waynesville. The day's activities were not ended, however. In the afternoon, a crowd of some 60 men with hunting dogs, clubs, axes, and guns surrounded the ancient tree and began hacking at it, doubtless somewhat gingerly. The hubbub alarmed the thing inside, which slithered out, reared up on its hind legs, and fled at a speed comparable to that of a galloping horse. Some of the less intrepid monster hunters did some running themselves, away from the monster. A few intrepid souls, however, followed the beast until it disappeared into a hole not far from the Little Miami. No one cared to go in after it, and posting a sentry didn't seem practical, so the folks simply blew up the entrance, presumably sealing whatever it was inside. At a later date, the rubble was cleared away in an effort to recover the corpse of what came to be called the Crosswick Monster. But alas, no remains were found. It was theorized that the hole exited into the Little Miami and that the creature had, after all, gotten away as all good creatures do. There was a story that the Crosswick Monster was later sighted in Shaker Swamp, a one-time marsh which lay some 3 miles west of Lebanon, the county seat of Warren County. Unfortunately, the story cannot be verified, and unlike the earlier tale, is not supported by names, dates, or any solid data. I've also heard gossip that young people parked for a little smooching near Caesar Creek have heard or glimpsed something which unnerved them. Again, names are lacking, and a great many things can unnerve neckers. The Crosswick Monster was described as reptilian, 30 to 40 feet long and about 16 inches in diameter, with scaled legs and body. The head, about the same thickness as the body, was split by a large mouth, deep red within, from which protruded fangs and a forked tongue. From all accounts, the creature propelled itself with its tail, leaning far forward with the long tail thrust out behind as a counterweight to the body. It was certainly bipedal. Like so many other reports, the story of the encounter near Waynesville raises more questions than it answers. Mainly, did it really happen? The 19th century was the great age of newspaper hoaxes, a period when journalistic standards were far lower than today. Could the Crosswick Monster have been the creation of a bored newsman sick to death of trivia? So that's the tale of the Crosswick Monster. And like I said, I'm going to do more looking into the story because, I'd never heard of this. And he goes on, like, this article, I probably should post this article actually. But it leads into talk about the Loveland frog, because the two cases are so close to one another, I guess. You'd never heard of this?
I've never heard of that before. Yeah. It sounds like a dinosaur.
I mean, well, he talks about dinosaurs. The writer of this actually goes on to say, and most importantly, if the story were true, if the monster happened to be real, what on earth was it? It sounds weirdly and most improbably like two 19th century Ohio youngsters had a run-in with a dinosaur. The description of the monster certainly doesn't jibe with that of an Allosaurus or Tyrannosaur, vastly bulkier creatures, but it doesn't sound too unlike a Strothiomimus or Ornitholestes. And the thing's speed ties in, just go with it, ties in very neatly with recent theories that the dinosaurs were warm-blooded and agile. Let's admit, frankly, that there are problems with the story. The first and biggest is that the dates that are available surrounding Crosswick and Shaker Swamp incidents conflict. Unfortunately, Waynesville had a newspaper only sporadically during the late 19th century. There was no question, however, that Dr. L.C. Lukens was a real person who practiced medicine in Waynesville. His name turned up in a county register of appropriate age. Would people in a small Ohio town in the 1880s have known enough about dinosaurs to concoct a hoax? The question is answerable, but my guess would be yes.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, it follows some themes for sure. I mean, you have the posse hunt, of course. Yeah. You have the early introduction, the story of a minister, which is kind of a feature of some of these stories to try to lend them a sense of credibility, perhaps. But still, that's really cool.
Yeah.
To hear that there's still stories out there from that era that are relatively unknown.
Yeah, especially here in Ohio, because I feel like we've, at this point, we've turned up a number of them, or Andy has with his little lake. Do you want to read this one, or did you want to recount it from memory?
Loveland Frog?
Yeah.
Should probably stick close to the text at first, just to make sure that I don't mess it up. But you know, there's the Loveland Frog spotted by the policeman, but there's a precedent for that with these little under-the-bridge dwellers. You know about that part of it?
No.
Yeah, it's the case of the trolls under the bridge. Loveland, Ohio, 1955, a Leonard H. Springfield inquiry into the quote-unquote affair under the bridge is perhaps well-known, perhaps not. And again, it says here, the famous drawing of the trolls under the bridge with their lopsided chests was sketched by Springfield based on his impression of what was seen, not drawn under the direction of witnesses. The exact description of the 1955 Loveland trolls could more properly place them in a Fortean creature chronicles than in UFO books. The frog-like nature of Loveland's 1955 beast is reinforced by the sightings from near there for 1972. In March of that year, on two separate occasions, two Ohio policemen saw what has become known as the Loveland Frogman. Investigated by Ron Schaffner and Richard Mackey, these researchers interviewed the officers involved, but have not published their names, instead using the fictitious names Williams and Johnson. The first incident took place at 1 a.m. on March 3rd, 1972, on a clear, cold night. Officer Williams was en route to Loveland via Riverside Road when he thought he saw a dog beside the road. But then the thing stood up, its eyes illuminated by the car lights, looked at him for an instant, turned, and leapt over a guardrail. Williams saw it go down an embankment into the Little Miami River, a mere 15 or so miles from the Ohio River. He described the thing as weighing about 60 pounds, about 3 or 4 feet tall, having a textured leathery skin and a face like a frog or lizard. Williams went on to the police station and returned with Officer Johnson to look for evidence of the creature. They turned up scrape marks leading down the side of the small hill near the river. On approximately March 17th, 1972, Officer Johnson was driving outside of Loveland when he had a similar experience. Seeing an animal lying in the middle of the road, he stopped to remove what he thought was a dead critter. Instead, when the officer opened a squeaky car door, the animal got up into a crouched position like a football player. The creature hobbled to the guardrail and lifted its leg over while constantly looking at Johnson. Perhaps it was the funny smirk on its face, but Johnson decided to shoot at it. He missed, he figured, since the thing didn't slow down. Johnson later told how he felt it was more upright than the way Williams described it. One area farmer told investigators he saw a large frog-like or lizard-like creature during the same month of the officer's sightings. And that is the end of the stories to date.
I have kind of a follow-up to this, and it gives the actual names. This ran in the Journal Herald which is apparently a Loveland paper. Mm-hmm. Loveland, police here have admitted that an unknown creature that touched off a secret and tight security measures at police headquarters has been shot and killed by a village patrolman. The creature, which was the subject of endless rumors here, appeared to be a 3-foot-tall frog, according to a policeman who saw it. Patrolman Mark Matthews said that his partner, Patrolman Ray Shockey, spotted the creature about a month ago near the Little Miami River, but Shockey told only his immediate superiors about it for fear of arousing alarm among area residents in this town that straddles Claremont, Hamilton, and Warren counties. Shockey refuses to comment on the case. A week later, Matthews says he was walking along the same spot on Kemper Road when he saw this thing about 3 feet long and with a face like a frog hop at me. It didn't show any signs of aggression, Matthews reports, but it was running and I wanted to see what it was, so I fired at it, hit it 4 times with this .357 Magnum service revolver. But Matthews says he never got a really close look at his prey because the animal gave one last hop, fell into the river, and was washed away. That sounds like a retelling of what you just said, but with details changed.
Mm-hmm.
Matthews says he doesn't believe in monsters and thinks that what he saw that night was an iguana. The week between the Shockey and Matthews sightings, the Loveland Police Department tried to keep the whole thing a secret, Matthews says, because we didn't want to scare people, and anyway, it would make the department look bad. Still puzzled after the animal was destroyed, the Loveland Police called in expert consultants in the case. First, an artist made a composite drawing based upon descriptions supplied by Shockey and Matthew. The drawing was sent to Perry Wakeman, a zoologist at the Cincinnati Zoo, for analysis. Wakeman's verdict on the drawing is that it was unlike any possible animal, but he thinks the thing might be an otter or a woodchuck. It couldn't be any type of amphibian or reptile, he says, because the weather was cold. But he admits that a species of giant frog does exist, the Rhaena giantis, or West African giant frog. It couldn't be Rhaena giantis, Wakeman says, because the weather was too cold. Wakeman isn't too mystified by the whole thing. He says that when people see something exciting, they call the zoo. Now the artist's drawing is back in the hands of the Loveland police, who have it under lock and key, lest someone become frightened. But the people at the police station still remember the thing. Call the Loveland police anytime, and they may answer the phone. Hello, ribbit, ribbit, ribbit. So that was the follow-up. It's interesting the details change on the story between what you're reading and what I read. What you read? Where was that from? Was that from
Curious Encounters by Lauren Coleman,
which is sitting directly behind you?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So mine was from, I guess, the Loveland newspaper. So I almost wonder if they didn't give them that info just to calm any fear. So anyway, right. The Loveland frog, there was a recent photograph, I believe a couple years ago, of what was supposedly the Loveland frog. I don't know where that came from or what the backstory was with that Loveland frog encounter, but there haven't been too many sightings of the Loveland frog. But Andy, your son, went to Loveland, right? Can you talk about that at all?
Or yeah, do you know sure. Anything about we using various descriptions, and I think there's other details in the Weird Ohio, the Weird Books series. So we were able to locate the sighting area pretty specifically. And, you know, the thing that's interesting and I guess remarkable about the area is that it's not that far from suburban Cincinnati. So it's like a lot of areas in Ohio where as soon as you leave suburbia, you're pretty much in the country and it's heavily wooded. And if there's a river, you have, you know, woods and a lot of green space going right up to the river's edge. However, in this case, it's, as it said in the article, it's on this Riverview Road and there's homes all along. So it's not isolated, I guess, is my first point. That's just, you know, it's its own thing and I guess is fairly frequent in terms of sightings. So it's also in proximity to this weird Loveland Castle, which was sort of this one guy's project throughout his life, was to add to this home and build it up to make it somewhat castle-like, but just, you know, this homemade project. So there's sort of this weird sort of homegrown vibe down in that area. And sort of that transitional region that Coleman talks about in his first chapter of Mysterious America, a sort of where the city meets the country is where a lot of these weird sightings seem to occur for whatever reason, one of which is you have to have a person to have a sighting.
Sure.
Right? So, yeah. And you're just on the edge of civilization. It seems like that's where a lot of these things tend to lurk, if you will. So that was, I think Andy came away with that very brief investigation feeling like, in the area that's being described, it's plausible that something could have been on the road and very quickly been in the river, because it's not a long travel down to the riverside. It's like it says in the witness descriptions, there's a road and an embankment, and then it's the Little Miami. So for something to quickly get into the river, it would be no problem. Mm. What was it is, of course, the main question there. Mm. And in what was seen, at least in those original reports, seemed to be, hurdling a guardrail instead of going under it, which to me seems to rule out a woodchuck or an otter as a explanation, but I don't know.
Who and these are they saw? Patrolmen, too, mm-hmm. like police officers that had these sightings. So the ridicule associated with this was pretty bad, too. I mean, you could see, like, even the newspapers taking a shot at them at the end of the article. So, which also runs back to the lizard man sightings in Bishopville as well. So, anything in closing on the subject?
Oh, just the, well, and for the Loveland frog, as far as that goes, in what you read, I was pretty amazed because already that was being, the iguana was mm-hmm. being introduced as an explanation.
Yeah.
And that's what I've heard in the years that have passed is that the principal witnesses won't talk about it anymore. And that one of them insists, well, it was an iguana.
Yeah.
As a way of just, I think, stopping the conversation.
Yeah.
And there's so much there, I think, just in terms of small towns, people knowing one another, unfortunately having an inexplicable event happen to you. And then word gets out and it takes on a life of its own. And then the witness finds himself in a precarious position, I guess, and especially someone in law enforcement. It was again stated in the article that no one wanted the police department to look bad. So they wanted to try to lock down the story. Going back to the case of Chris Davis, he took that more in the direction of trying to capitalize on his encounter. And, I don't mean that in an accusatory way.
In a negative way. Yeah, yeah.
But, he leveraged that into appearances and talking about his experience. He made a little bit of money doing so. But,
sure.
It's kind of up to the witness to do what they want with what's happened to them. And I guess we still find ourselves in that sort of situation.
Yeah. Lizard Mania has wrapped. This will have wrapped the Lizard Mania at Monsteropolis. You can find more episodes of Monsteropolis at monsteropolis.podbean.com. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/I don't know. We're on Facebook. We're also on Twitter. And you can leave us a rating and review on iTunes. That would be great. Email is monsteropolismail@gmail.com, and we'd love to see you at either of the events we have coming up in Coshocton on July 27th or in Pittsburgh, PA at the Black Forge Coffee House on July 19th. So thanks for listening.
Monsteropolis is proudly presented on Wadsworth Community Radio 97.1 FM or streaming live at wadsworthcommunityradio.com. It is proudly underwritten by Thurber's Jewelers on the Square in downtown Wadsworth.